Look into our scriptures this morning in 2 Kings chapter number 4. I'd like to preach to you for a little while this morning about this situation when you're down and out, because we're going to find a lady that was down and out. As you find your place, it's not too far in the Old Testament there, 2 Kings chapter 4. While you find your place in 2 Kings chapter 4, I did hear this story about this lawyer who was driving out in the country, and he literally ran into a farmer. They got in an accident and ran into each other, and they were both pretty shook up. And the farmer went back to his truck, and he got what Granny Clampett on the Beverly Hillbillies used to call rheumatism medicine, got some of that out of the back, and told that lawyer, here, you better have a little of this. You look pretty shaken. And he reluctantly did it, and just a moment or so later, he said, you better take a little bit more of that. And he did, and then about at the farmer's urging, he did it 3 or 4 or 5 more times. Finally, he got feeling pretty loose. His rheumatism was good, I guess, for that matter. And finally, that lawyer asked the farmer, he said, well, don't you think you ought to have a little bit of it? He said, me? He said, yeah, don't you think you ought to have a little bit? He said, not me. I'm waiting for the state troopers to show up. So be careful. You got to watch those farmers. They'll outsmart you every time. So I want to look at 2 Kings chapter number 4. We'll read about 7 verses here. And I'm preaching about when you're down and out. And this lady certainly needed a touch from the Lord. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha. He's the preacher man there, saying, thy servant, my husband, is dead, and thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord. And the creditor has come to take unto him my 2 sons to be bondmen. And Elisha said unto her, what shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in thy house? And she said, thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil. Then he said, go, borrow these vessels abroad and of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels, borrow not a few, meaning get as many as you can, get a lot of them. And when thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and thou shalt pour into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and upon her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. It came to pass when the vessels were full that she said unto her son, bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, there is not a vessel more, and the oil stayed. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, go, sell the oil and pay thy debt, and live, thou and thy children, of the rest. As I mentioned, I want to preach about this when you're down and out. Apparently, Elisha knew this woman's husband, or at least knew of him, because it says in verse number 1, thy servant, my husband is dead, and thou knowest that thy husband did fear the Lord. So at least he knew him by reputation, if not knowing him personally. Thy servant did fear the Lord. And so here it is that this son of the prophet, his wife, is there in a situation where she can't get herself out. Now, in those days, as it said, the creditor was come, and in those days, there weren't welfare programs, there weren't government agencies that would help in a situation like that. If he were gone, the man were passed off, then the debt would have fallen onto them, and then the creditors were legally allowed to put those boys in bond service. And so they would be slaves until that debt was paid. And so I'm thinking about this morning. You may find yourself in a situation that you feel like you're bound up and there's things that are going in your life you don't know how to do. I do notice in that situation, the lady doesn't claim that she doesn't owe it. She doesn't claim that it's a mistake. She doesn't claim that there's not some realistic expectations of these creditors. Basically, she got into this mess herself or got in this situation. But you may be in a situation yourself this morning that it's not somebody else that did it, it's you. I find that when I get into troubles, there's usually one person who gets myself in most of those troubles. I like to say it's Amy. I really like to say it's her. But it's usually me. But I'm not speaking about you getting into trouble that wasn't your deserved trouble, because this lady doesn't say anything about this trouble not being legitimately hers. She just says, the creditors are after me. She doesn't say, I don't owe the debt. She owes the debt. And so we see here that she's in a problem of her and her husband's own making. As I've mentioned to you before, the question I get more often than not, or more often as I talk to people, is, Pastor, why are these bad things happening to good people? These were good people. These were folks that were serving the Lord. These were folks that were doing right. They were trying to do what they should have done. And so I want to preach through this passage and trust it's a blessing. First of all, I want you to look in verse number 1 and 2. I'm looking at the dire view of the widow. I'm looking at the dire view of the widow. If you look at what's happening, her husband is dead. There's an unpaid debt, and she doesn't have a way to pay it. And number three, she's got a fear of losing her children. All this was done as she could say, I'm living right. I'm doing the things I'm supposed to. My husband works in the service of the Lord down there. But we did see that bad things were happening to good people. And says in verse number 2, thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil. The dire view of this widow here is that there's nothing that can be done with the stuff that I have to get me out of the problem that I've made. And so we look at this dire view of her, and she really is legitimately saying, I don't have anything that can get done with my situation. In a book, A View from the Zoo by Gary Richmond, he describes the birth of a giraffe. This giraffe, as they're born, fall 5, 6, or 7 feet or so there. And then after the mama giraffe puts her head down there and snuggles just a little bit, she does the unthinkable. She'll take that gangly front leg of hers and knock that baby giraffe over, send him sprawling head over heels and just send him down through the field. And then she'll walk and catch up with him and do it again and again. She'll do it a few times. He quickly, on his little wobbly legs, tries to get up, and when he finally does get up, then the mom does it one more time at least and knocks him over again. And as you can imagine, us just being grandparents, we're thinking, oh, who would want to hurt that little baby giraffe even? But you got to understand the enemies that are around where that giraffe was born at. There's hyenas and lions and leopards and all of them ready to take a little defenseless giraffe and have their way with him. And so the baby only survives if he gets up. And so he may get kicked around, may get kicked and knocked down, but there's a reason for that. Well, this lady that we read about, she feels like she's been kicked around. She feels like life has given her the 1-2 punch. And we see the dire view of the widow as she's not sure that she can make it. She's been kicked down, but I want you to look also in verse number 2 that not only that dire view of her, but there's something that happens in verse number 2. And I want us to see if we can see the paradigm change and see if we can see the outlook change. Elisha said unto her, what shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in thy house? And she said, thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save this pot of oil. Reminds me of Andrew when they came to him and all those thousands of people needed to be fed and they were hungry. And they said, well, there's a lad here. He's got a couple fish and some loaves, but what are they among so many? There's no way we can feed all these thousands of people with a fish sandwich. And so we might as well say we don't have anything. And I believe that this lady is about in the same situation. She says, I don't have anything in the house. Oh, yeah, there's that little pot of oil over there. But that's not enough to even keep us for the little bit of time, let alone pay all of our debts. But I want you to see the direction that the prophet turns this conversation. And if God would allow us to have our direction changed as well today, I'd like for you to have your direction changed. I can see how the prophet completely takes the focus of where that lady is and moves it over to something that she's probably overlooking because she says, I ain't got nothing in the house. That was the way she would have said it maybe in the day, or at least the way I would have said it back growing up. We ain't got nothing in the house. And what the prophet said to her as he said, what do you have? She said, I ain't got nothing. There's a little pot of oil. And I think if I can take you with me to my imagination and see that prophet said, you're looking over the thing that I'm going to use, that God's going to use to get you out of the jam that you're in. You're saying there's nothing in the house save this little pot of oil, but I want you to take your attention from all that nothing and put it on that little pot of oil, because we're going to find what God's going to use to get you out of the spot that you are in. If we ask the average Christian today, how are you doing? I'm afraid that the next 10, 15, or 20 minutes would be filled with them telling how bad the economy is, how bad the morals are in our nation, how the election is making them sick, and well, it is everybody, and how illness has invaded their family, and it's invading all of our family, how the housing prices are making it so their children can't buy a house, and the interest rates are too high, and all of these things, and they would talk about all of those problems if we asked them today. But I'm reminding you this morning that what we are forgetting in all that tirade of all of the immorality and all of the economy and all the things that are going wrong, that you and I, if you're named by the name of Jesus Christ, you and I have Him, and His promise says that He will never leave you nor forsake you. So I would like to be, if I could be, I'm not presuming to be anywhere near Elisha, but I'd like to take your attention as he did that widow woman that day and turn your attention from what you don't have to what you do have, because what she didn't have was a way to see her way out of all of the debt that her and her husband had incurred. What she did not have was a plan to get out of her problems, but what she did have was a little bit of oil, and God was going to take it and use it to get her out of the situation that she was in. I'm seeing the direction that the prophet turns the conversation. And if God would allow you to get your direction changed this morning, you've got a whole lot more going for you, and I've got a whole lot more going for me than we could ever imagine. In a book entitled The Fall of the Fortresses, Elmer Bendenheimer tells of his B-17 bomber that he flew in World War II, one particular mission over Kassel, Germany. It was not unusual for them to get shot at by anti-aircraft missiles, but it wasn't even uncommon for them to get hit once in a while, but they got hit where the fuel tanks were. And so he was assuming that he would soon go down, but he did not. That mission made it back. And he was rehearsing and then checking how that was even possible. But as he got back, he talked to his pilot, and his pilot said, "It's more miraculous than what you're thinking." He said, "We didn't get hit once in the fuel tank. We got hit 11 times in the fuel tanks on this aircraft. The shells that had been sent up in the air were supposed to explode when they hit either near or in the aircraft, but they did not. As they got them out, they're all 11 of them out of the air, out of the fuel tanks of that B-17. They took them, or sent them rather, to the armorers to be diffused, to be taken apart, because they were worried that they could go off at any time. But there they found something even stranger, and so Elmer's pilot was telling him, there they found some things even more strange than what they'd had. Those 11 shells, had they not detonated, they were all empty. Elmer in his book says they were clean as a whistle and just as dangerous. All empty but one. So as they took those things apart, they found that there was a note rolled up tightly, in one of those warheads, and it said in writing that they couldn't understand. They got a translator to translate from Czech into what they could understand, and it said, rough translation was this: "This is all we can do for now." And so all that they can assume, that it was put together by a Czech prisoner of war, somebody held against his will, as the Germans were taking them as prisoners of war, and they were purposely leaving the whatever detonated out of those heads, out of those shells, they were leaving that out. But on that one, he put in there, "This is all we can do for now." And so unbeknownst to Elmer and his pilot and all the rest, they had forces at work for them that were going to end up saving their life. And I'm thinking about this woman as I was trying to prepare this message this week. She was overlooking the one thing that God was going to use in her life to sustain her. And I'm wondering if you and I are not doing the same thing. Are we like Andrew that says, "A fish sandwich, a couple loaves and some fish, what good are they among so many?" She pretty much said the same thing. "We ain't got nothing in the house except this one little bit of oil." And as that prophet took her attention away from what she didn't have to what she did have, then she trusted the Lord at the urging of the prophet to follow God and see Him meet her needs and her kids' needs. We've been looking too long at what we don't have, and you and I are bad at not looking at what we do have. My friend, if God's word is true, and you know it is, He will never leave you nor forsake you. If you're named by the precious name of Jesus Christ, it's not only that He doesn't want to leave you. He couldn't leave you if He did want to, which He doesn't want to, but He couldn't leave you if He did want to, because His character doesn't allow Him to do something He said He'd never do, and He promised He would never leave you nor forsake you. And while you and I are looking at all the things that I don't have, and you and I are looking at all the problems that I wish weren't present in my life, sometimes I'm overlooking the presence of the Lord. I'm overlooking all the good that God has done, and I'm looking, overlooking that little cruise of oil over there, and I say, I ain't got nothing. Well, yes, I've got that, but what's that? Well, it may very well be what God uses to sustain you and your family and those around you. You just don't think it's powerful enough. And that little bit of oil is not powerful in itself, but the God of all gods, the God of creation, the God of heaven, the God of salvation, the God that wrote it before the world began, he was there, and the one that will be there for the everlasting and everlasting, that one is going to take that oil and make it into something. You may be saying that we don't have enough in our marriage to make this thing work, but my friend, don't count God out. God works really good when we don't think he can. And before we go, I want to show you the last step of it here and look at verse 5 and 6. Not only did the prophet turn that direction, but then I want you to see the door is shut to let God work. So she went from him, verse 5 is where I'm at, and shut the door upon her and upon her sons who brought the vessels to her. They went out to every family, every friend, everybody they could find and bring us in some, and she poured out. It came to pass when the vessels were full that she said unto her, bring me another one. And he said, they ain't no more. So when she went, verse number 5, and shut the door. You've heard the phrase that says, let's get down to business. You can be chit-chatting about stuff all the kind of time. Well, how's this? And how's your family? And how's the weather? How's all that? But eventually you got to get down. Let's get down to business. This is why I'm here. You want to sell that or don't you? Or you want to do this or not? You want to make this trade or not? Well, let's get down to business. Well, eventually, here this lady at the urging of the prophet gets down to business because she's going to shut the door and let God work in that room. You say, couldn't he have worked with the door open? God's God. He can do whatever he wants to, but he chose to do it after he shut the door. I'm thinking about this in Matthew chapter 6, verse number 6. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and thou shalt shut the door, and pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. I'm thinking of another passage in Luke chapter 8 as I was looking it up to get ready. The Bible says, talking about Jesus when he's going to raise this girl up from the dead, he put them all out. He took her by the hand and called, saying, maid, arise, and her spirit came again and she arose. There's just that girl in there and a mom and dad and a couple of disciples, but he apparently must have shut the doors on everybody else. And I'm afraid that we've forgotten that God likes to do a lot of things when nobody else is watching. I believe that God's going to do things in the crowd, and I think that he's going to do things when there's other people around, but I also know from experience and know from this book that there are going to be times when God's not going to do it until you shut everything out and you just let him work. I don't know what it is, folks. Really, I don't. Perhaps as long as that door is open, we think that somebody or something's going to come in and save the day. But there's something when I shut that door, either literally or figuratively, something about when I shut that door, I'm shutting out every other possibility. As you say, God, it's you and me. And I don't know if you've checked lately, but I ain't bringing much to the equation. You shut the door, and that's what this lady did, her and her sons. And then she started pouring that oil out. Moses on the backside of the desert is where God saw fit to come and empower him. Daniel down the lion's den. He had never had no ministry like that before. How did you see a prayer card says lion's den ministry? He didn't have anything like that. It's just him and God and some hungry lions, but they wouldn't eat to save their life. The three Hebrew children down the fiery furnace. And God, when that door got shut on them, the Son of Man came down and visited them as well. Paul and Silas in jail at midnight, and they sang together. John got pushed out from everybody and everything, got exiled to the Isle of Patmos. Joshua and Caleb with at odds with those other 10 spies that said, there ain't no way we can do that. And they would say, well, I believe there is a way. And God worked in their heart, even though the other people didn't believe him. Joseph, when he was in the pit, you remember when Joseph got, one of his captors said, well, everything just gets blessed. Whatever he touches turns to gold. Well, God was with him. That's why it was getting turned to gold. But God was with Joseph long before the people started noticing that. God was with Joseph back when he was in the pit, when his brothers put him in there. I'm just saying to you this morning, when the door gets shut and when there's no other opportunity, there's no other possibilities, there's nothing else that can happen, you may very well be in a spot where God is getting ready to work in a major way. But you and I'm guilty. I start asking everybody else what they can do for my situation. Financial problem, health problem, difficulty. I go to everywhere else, and I don't think that's wrong. But like one old person said, excuse me, one person that went to the doctor, and the doctor was a believer, and really the doctor said, there's nothing else I can do. All we have left is to pray. And that person said, oh my, it hadn't come to that, has it? Sometimes that's how we live. My friend, I'm not opposed to every bit of help that God's going to send your way. After you shut the door, he may have somebody on the outside bust that door in and bring every need that you have. I'm not saying he won't do it, but I am saying that you and I, as Christian people, we ought to be the one, just like this lady did, shut the door and let God work. There's something about shutting that door that reminds me that there's nobody coming from the outside. There's no assistant that's going to come my way. There's no money that's going to make its way into my coffers. I'm going to have to trust God. A preacher friend of mine had gotten news as his wife and little one were in the hospital, and it wasn't looking good for the baby, and so he looked around. He was a preacher. He tried to find the chapel. He couldn't find that. He tried to find an empty room. He couldn't find that. The only thing he could do was go to the restroom, and one of the handicapped stalls had a little bit more of a room in there, and he locked the door on there. He just paced around and around in that little thing until he just felt like God had met with him. My friend, I'm telling you that as Christian people, we are missing it when we don't get alone with the Lord and say, Lord, I'm here. Please, I need you to work. So it was prompted by the prophet to turn her direction from what she did not have to what she did have, even though it was small. And then she followed that by the step of faith, and she shut that door at the urging of the prophet, and she saw God do a great victory in her life. So I don't know what you're looking at this morning, but if you are saying, like this widow did, thine handmaid hath nothing, then you need to let God redirect your attention to what you do have: his power, his presence, his provision. Instead of looking at all the things that you, I don't have an opportunity like so and so. I can't believe I don't have somebody to fund my whatever like they do. I can't believe that they've got that. Lucky them. And well, look how blessed they are. Look how fortunate they are. We're the world's worst, all of us. You say, who are you talking about? I'm talking about you and me. We're the world's worst at thinking about what we don't have. And we're the best at overlooking what we do have. If everything got taken away from us except the presence of God, my friend, I would tell you to walk out of here with your head held high and say you can face any demon that's out there because of him. So this morning, maybe we need to shut the door. Why should I worry? You understand that we've got the God of all creation that wants to meet our needs. When you're down and out, and this lady was, she shouldn't have been worried. She shouldn't have been upset, but she was. You say, oh, well, shame on her. Well, shame on me too, because I've been right there with her. I might have been with her in that day. I said, I don't know what we're going to do. Let's get some family. We'll get you in a covered wagon and get you out of here so you can skip town. We'd have come up with all kinds of harebrained ideas. But the prophet, the preacher man, came along and said, don't tell me what you don't have. Ain't no sense in being worried. Let me tell you, let's focus on what you do have. And what God can do with what the little you do have is going to make this unbelievably okay. I want to mind the Lord in all that we do. Maddie is going to sing a song. My daughter's going to sing a song tonight. But I'd like for you to come sing that, Maddie. Let me get you a microphone. There's one right here if you'll. Marty's one of those on. Can you sing that for us? Why should I worry? My friend, I'm finding people, Christian people, not the ones you're thinking about. Not the ones that, oh yeah, I know they got lots of problems. No, I'm talking about the ones that don't have no problems, us, supposedly. We're worried and fretting. We're acting like God's advocated his throne. We're acting as if the God of all supply isn't still concerned about me. we're acting like we're on our own down here. And my friend, we ought not be doing that. It's not, you're not seeing the whole picture. You're looking at the wrong side of it. And I don't know where you're at this morning, but I'd like for you to ask yourself the question that the song asks, why should I worry? Because God is there to take care of your needs. And we fret and we worry and we wring our hands. I don't know how we're going to get through this. I'm looking at me too much than looking at Him. As we think about that, maybe you're here and you're a Christian and you're saying, Pastor John, I'm here for God's perfect leading because He wanted me to hear this, and I trust that you realize that. You got to understand that we've got an all-powerful, almighty God. What that lady knew, back when that lady was complaining about not having anything, did God get any more powerful from that time till He filled all of her needs? No. God was just as powerful when she was helpless as she was when she was plentiful. God was the same God that could do anything before the oil started materializing than He was afterwards. Same God. Only thing that changed was she was now looking at Him, trusting Him. And my friend, you have got to understand He's there. Whatever's going through, if you're here and God is working your heart, I'm challenging you to trust Him in it. Trust Him in it. Trust Him through it. Sing for us, Maddie.
Out on the waters, storms raging high, the waters around them were troubled that night. Fear filled their hearts, they felt they would die. They failed to remember that the Master was nigh. All stood still, even the waters, they obey His will. He calmed their storm, just like He will mine. If I just remember, He lives deep inside, so why should I worry? Passes by. We read in the Bible, when He walked with them, brought light to the darkness when the way grew so dim. How great it would be to have His footsteps in mine and to walk with all of the time. And when trials come and death seems so nigh, I'll call on the Master. I know He'll get there on time. And when sickness comes and my body's in pain, all I have to do is till the storm passes by. So why should I worry? Why should I fear when the very same Jesus, He is always so near. He lives in my heart and He hears when I cry. I'll call on His name till the storm passes by. I'll call on His name till the storm passes by.
Now, folks, if I were at all worried about your supply not being sufficient, I would not preach this. If I were concerned that possibly you'd run against a problem that God can't handle, then I would hold back. I would be a dishonest preacher to say those things. But I'm not concerned at all, because if we believe John 3:16, then we can believe every promise is in there that says He'll never leave us nor forsake us. If we can believe that He came and died on an old rugged cross, and I know that you do, then we can also believe that He'll take our situations just like He did for this widow lady. And He'll take the little bit that she thought was nothing. And may I just say, a little bit without God is nothing, but a little bit with God is a whole bunch. And I trust as we go out of here, I trust that we will have confidence in God's ability to do what He wants to do in your life. And maybe it's time that we stop looking at what we can do and we start trusting Him. Thank you. Thank you for being in church this morning. And as we close, I just want to say thank you for just being with me. I trust, I sense the Lord has worked right here in our midst this morning. I believe He's touched us, and I don't take that for granted. And some of you all is in here to preach, Brother David, Brother Joe, different folks have been here to preach. You know that the scariest thing is to not feel the touch of the Lord. And I sense He moved in amongst us this morning. Thank you for being here with us. And if you're here, I didn't specifically ask you this, but if you're here, you're not sure you're saved. I'll be back in the back. Amy and I will be back there. She's got some ladies. The different things are coming up. If you need to sign up for something or whatnot, she'll be back there. But I'll be back there. Brother Mike Barber, our good missionary that is going to go plant a church in Nashville, he'd love nothing more than to share why he's going to Nashville, is to tell everybody he can that Jesus saved, or Jesus wants to save their soul. So if you meet with us in the back, we would certainly be honored and wonderfully blessed to have that. Tonight, this is not that spiritual. The service will be, Lord willing. We'll hear from Brother Michael, and I'll preach a little bit from 1 Peter. But afterwards, Goo Goo Clusters are made in Nashville, Tennessee. That was a blessing. That's what we're going to have, Goo Goo Clusters after service. But you know those things are $2 or $3 a piece? Could you talk to somebody when you get over there? So we opted for moon pies, the economical choice. So we'll have moon pies for everybody and Cokes after service tonight, and we'll have a good time fellowshipping together. And I want you to come hear from Brother Michael, because he needs your prayer support. He needs you to labor with him as he goes over there to plant this church and see what God's going to do in our state's capital. And I want to be behind him. So I don't think we have any other announcements, do we? Okay. Thank you for being in church. Why don't you stand together? Maddie, you want to play us out? And then thank you for being in church. God bless you. You're dismissed.